Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Never do this. I have John on the line. I would like to tell the audience I live in Minnesota. I live 2.5 hours north of the epicenter of the Minneapolis riots. There's been over 30 buildings burned and looted, including a Native American youth center that's been there for 40 years and they lost all their archives. There's been rumors that a St. Paul police named Jacob, I can't remember his last name, started breaking the windows of AutoZone. He was undercover with an umbrella. So some police are involved in the riots that began the first night, which was around Tuesday. And within the last hour and a half, Derek Chauvin has been arrested for the crime of murder, and he will be housed in the, I'm not sure if it's the jail, but he has been charged, the police officer who murdered George Floyd. And with that, I'll bring John in. Good afternoon, John. How are you doing?
Hello, Jane. I'm actually doing quite well. It's actually a beautiful day out here in California.
That's great. And are people still practicing social distancing pretty well there?
People are practicing safe sex. Social distancing, not so much. It's half and half, kind of.
Okay. So today we had a hot topic last night. We were discussing just the whole aura around the systemic racism and why Minneapolis became the flashpoint for that anger. But one thing that was probably different about this case as opposed to a lot of other ones, well, we saw in Georgia a few months ago where a man and his son just blatantly killed a black man jogging, and they try to associate that to a crime. In this case, it appears that George Floyd tried to use a fake $20 bill in a Muslim store called Cup Foods, which is like a mini grocery store, and they called the cops on him, and four police officers responded, and they arrested him and put him in handcuffs. And then a police officer named Derek Chauvin attempted to hold him on the knee by the neck where all your nerves go to the brain, and the man died on the way to the hospital. So because it was in broad daylight, there were many bystanders, including a citizen EMT present to tell him to check his pulse, and it was blatant, and the police officer didn't seem to have any reconsideration of what he was doing at the time. It became an explosive situation. Now we have big chunks of the 3rd Precinct of Minneapolis burned down, including the precinct itself, and I believe it's almost equaled the Los Angeles riots of 1992. What is your idea and framework about this?
Well, I had a brother at work who he's about 23, 24. He's African American. Actually, it's funny. His name is first name is Rakim, and Malik. So he's got another last name also, but basically, when people see his name, they think he's a Muslim, and they even think like maybe he's extremist. And he's actually a very nice guy. He would probably do pretty well living with with Will Smith, with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know, he's kind of like you could maybe call him a homogenized black male. In other words, he doesn't talk ghetto, you know, even though he can. He's basically talks, you know, very educated white middle class. But and so we talked a little bit about it yesterday. He said what really appalls him is just this, like, he understands that this was a terrible thing that happened and that it shouldn't have happened. But he says, you know, I have my people tearing up the hood, tearing up the places they live, burning down a Target, burning down an auto store. They live here. He says, what people are going to put businesses there to replace it? How many people lost their jobs yesterday? How many people lost the places to work and support themselves? We have a hard enough time getting people to get jobs now and get going again. What does this prove? I'm talking about the destruction. How does that prove the point? It just tells white people stay away from black people, you know, and half of this is white people running around doing the looting. How does robbing stuff out of a store tell people that we're going to handle social injustice?
I just think, just like with any other human nature, I think it got out of hand. It got completely out of hand, and I heard that... even on the first night where people were just standing there, protesters, there were cops on the roof with rubber bullets and tear gas. Now, it's my understanding that it's a small handful of looters that were mixed in with the crowd with the protesters, and I'm not there to judge, but I've watched a lot of homemade videos. But I don't think destroying any property is a positive reflection of seeking justice. And also I feel like people went too far. Like, they burned down a brand new housing complex that was under construction that was for poor. And now whoever that contractor was with the city or whatever, they have to start all over again.
Well, what he said is, which very interesting. I mean, it's very mature, or in depth, from considering his age. He said, "These people don't care about this guy. They don't. It's not like they were protesting before. Is there a bunch of people? Not all of them, but a great many were looking to rumble, like, and I mean for a cause. And it could be anything. It's like, hey, kids, like, you know, school prep rally. It's, you know, SC versus UCLA. Come on, let's go tonight. Let's go hang out there. And they all, let's start a bonfire. And, oh, look at those guys. They're wearing the blue outfits. We're wearing the red outfits. You know, you mother effers, you know, we'll beat the crap out of you, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, someone got drunk and now they're fighting. And let's throw over their car. Let's go over their house. Let's teepee it. Let's burn down the town. For what? Well, because they're on a different football team, you know. Or most people don't know. Did you know that George Floyd?
That's your favorite line these days.
I'm loving it. And Derek Chauvin both worked security at El Nuevo Rodeo Club on Lake Street, according to the owner, Maya Santa
Maria.
Where
do they work security? Where?
They both work security at the same club.
Derek Chauvin and who? I'm sorry, I got sidetracked by a post.
George Floyd, the man who died. Okay, George worked as a security guard. So first of all, he knows protocol, right? Think about this. If you work at...
But he did, John, I just want to clarify something. He did not resist arrest. Did you know he
That's
was in handcuffs?
Funny.
They released the video from Cup Foods. He did not resist arrest.
Well, have you seen the cop body camera footage?
No, I haven't. I've only seen the store footage and the one from behind the van.
So you saw him walked around at one section. You saw him on the ground, surrounded by three. You know there were like four cops there.
This is what I saw. I saw the part that everyone saw the first day, where the cop was just kneeing him. Then last night I saw him on the other side of the police van while he was handcuffed, and then he sat down flat in front of the store, like with his back against the wall.
Right, so they're like a cop by his foot, a cop by his midsection, and then the Derek, who had his knee over his foot and knee over his neck. And then there was also an Asian cop standing there, right?
Yeah, I saw the Asian cop, but only in still photos.
So you've got, you know, four people there. One of them's got the feet. So what are they doing with the foot? What are they doing with the midsection? Or in other words, it wasn't one guy who just tackled him and said, you know, beat the crap out of him. He wasn't punching. They were holding him down. Why were they holding? And that's a question to ask. I don't know. I haven't seen the half hour or whatever before that of between spaces, what was said? What was the dialogue? Was he struggling? Was he having a seizure? Now, is it protocol once you handcuff someone to put your foot on their neck? No. I don't see
it.
It
was his knee.
That.
No, it's not protocol. And that's why my question is, well, we don't know exactly what happened, either of us, but why was he held his, why did he held his knee to the back of his neck for 8 minutes? When that's the
right.
arteries to your brain and it's crucial to your life. Like, could he have just done it for a second and just say shape?
I think what they should do is just have always have a minority cop with paired with another minority or white cop, and when there's a problem, the minority arrests the minority. I think they should have a rule. Once you put handcuffs on, you leave them on the ground, you know, and then you, if they roll around, that's fine. I mean, what are they going to do? You know, roll up and I mean, grab a stick and try to, with their hands behind the back. I don't see the point of that kind of force. But I think
now,
if, so you know,
are you,
is,
can I just ask you this one time, because you always play the devil's advocate. Do you think that what the cop did was wrong, point blank?
Oh, totally wrong. Once a person's handcuffed, I've been handcuffed before, there's not much you can do. You know, maybe headbutt someone, maybe. But it's a very helpless situation, because you sit there and you realize they could do anything to you, and there's nothing you can do. You kick at them, they just push you over. So I don't see in this case. Now, again, going back to the situation, okay, Derek used to work on the outside of the club, and George would work on the inside of the club. And apparently there were anywhere from 5 to 10 cops on the outside. And again, a normal club, you know, you can imagine in a regular club, you've got 2 or 3 guys minimum. There, you know, one's at the door, one's the other door, the other's working the floor, probably 2 or 3 guys, you know, in a normal club. Because if there's trouble, you don't want to have just one guy, right? You got to have a couple bouncers and people to take order. The point is, they over working over a year or more together or at the same club, you've seen, I mean, at my store, the first thing that shows up is like, oh, who's working the front? Who's working the back? They say, hi, what's going on? We go to break room. You know, when there's problems, one calls the other like, hey, you know, Bill in the back, come over here. You know, we got a problem. We're the ones, the clerks are the ones calling them. Security, we need security at aisle 5. We know everyone, you know, almost intimately, like where they're going, what they're doing. So there's a backstory with this. At some level, he had to know him or know about him.
Well, I did read a little research on the man. He was put on administrative leave at least once, and he had at least 2 other confrontations with people that didn't end well. I posted it on my Facebook wall, and now I'm having trouble finding it. So I'm going to bring it up in a second. I liked your points. They were valid. I guess when you're in broad daylight and, like, you know how I'm part of a 12-step meeting and they talk a lot about decisions and poor judgment and impulse decisions. So this man, he was in broad daylight surrounded by 3 coworkers, 3 co-officers. He had a choice he could make. Now, if he stuck his knee on his neck just to prove a point or be cocky, that's one thing. But for other, to do that for 8 minutes, and then someone told me last night, actually Don's wife, that once a cop makes a decision, it's protocol for the other cops not to argue with him. He made that decision, and he didn't back down, and it caused a death and inevitably a city burning. So I just
I would question that call, though, because it's when you may have a partner, you may back up your other partner's decision, but there's also liability. And I'll give you an example. If a coworker is, let's just say a coworker's having a problem with a customer, right? And they're arguing. And this happens a lot, right? Customer will start going, blah, 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 and you can hear them. They're arguing. It's like, sir, step back, you know, sir, just calm down. And then they're blah, 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 right? And you go like, security, register 6. Okay, now, there's a certain point where you go, hey, that's their problem. They'll work it out. I'm kind of watching. If the customer pulls out a knife, and then let's just say our coworker pulled out a bat, I wouldn't sit there and go, well, you know, he's made that decision to get the bat. I'm going to support what he's doing. It'd be like, you know, like Jose, put down the bat. Guys, stop it. Like, someone's going to get hurt. There's a cameras. This is the thing that makes it crazy is it's not something that happened in the back room. They see people. They're on the street. Just common sense is going to go, dude, we're going to lose our jobs. We're going to get sued. Like, okay, it's been 30 seconds.
I think,
I
like,
get it.
You know, Don's wife didn't understand me last night when I was trying to explain to her that Minneapolis is a very diverse city. We have Somalians, Ethiopians by huge numbers. We took in all the Liberians during the Civil War. We're kind of like the Detroit of the U.S. with Africans in the same way that Detroit has taken in large Muslim populations. When I grew up in the mid-70s in White Bear Lake, about 15 miles from Minneapolis, it was 2% other cultures, and it was 98% white. Then when the Vietnam War ended, we were the first state to take in Hmongs and refugees from the Vietnam War, and there's a huge Hmong population in St. Paul. And I kept trying to explain to Pat that we have a huge African presence. The store that he presented the $20 bill to was a Muslim-owned store, and that now that Muslim-owned store is paying for his funeral out of pity. And we are not, we pride ourselves in treating people well. So that's why I'm so torn apart. And I did find some relevant information that you were discussing, so if you don't mind, I have to read a paragraph. Minneapolis City Council records show that Chauvin moonlighted as a bouncer at a downtown Latin nightclub. A former owner of the club on Thursday told that Floyd also worked security for the club to the end of last year, which was probably around December. But Maya Santa Maria, who the station reported owned the El Nuevo Rodeo Club for nearly two decades before selling the venue, said she didn't know if the two men knew each other because there's often at least a dozen security guards at night. In 2006, Chauvin was among a group of officers who opened fire on a stabbing suspect after chasing him, and the suspect pointed a sawed-off shotgun at them. The suspect, Wayne Reyes, was hit and killed. A grand jury decided the use of force was justified. 2 years later, Chauvin shot Ira Latrell Torres as he was responding to a domestic dispute. According to the St. Paul Pioneer Press, a 911 operator received a call from an apartment that he heard a woman yelling for help to stop hitting her. Chauvin and another officer arrived, and Torres locked himself in the bathroom. Chauvin forced his way into the bathroom. Torres went for Chauvin's gun, and Chauvin shot him twice in the stomach. Torres survived and was charged with two counts of felony obstruction. So at least that gives you a better idea.
Right, and I wouldn't second guess someone. Like if you or I went into a building with someone who was dangerous and they tried to grab your gun or my gun, I mean, basically, you know, it kind of goes back to stupid cop meets stupid citizen or stupid, you know, person on the street. I mean, Jane, if a cop comes up to you, would you ever try to grab his gun?
Well, I just read the second part of the article. My answer is no. Torres, the guy who was shot in the bathroom, said that when Chauvin broke through the bathroom door, he started to hit him without warning. He said he fought back in self-defense and was too disoriented to go for the gun. And he also stated the man tried to kill him in the bathroom. But No, I would not ever touch a police officer's gun, and I might do the same thing. I might hide in the bathroom if a cop arrived.
Well, go back to the story. Why was he called out to the place?
Domestic violence.
Domestic violence. So did the cop drive around and go, hey, I'm going to just bust down a door and walk in? Or did someone call and say, hey, my boyfriend or husband is hitting me. I'm afraid for my life. Come save me. Isn't that what normally happens on a domestic violence call? Or the neighbors call and say, hey, next door, I'm hearing some loud noises. People are yelling at each other. I hear a woman screaming, help. So what's a cop going to do?
I'm going to retract that statement. Even if he was hitting his girlfriend, he shouldn't have hid in the bathroom, because then the cops had no choice but to bust on the door if he wasn't cooperating.
Bingo.
He could have just said, yes, I hit my girlfriend, or he could have hidden in the corner of the living room till they got there ashamed. But it was a bad move. I have two other Chauvin incidents to report, and then we can you can go on with your theories. Online city records show that 17 complaints have been filed against Officer Chauvin. 16 complaints were closed with no discipline. The remaining complaint generated two letters of reprimand, with one apparently related to the use of a squad car dashboard camera. And there was no substance to those complaints. Chauvin was also among a group of five officers in 2011 who chased down a man named Leroy Martinez in a housing complex after they spotted him running with a pistol. One of the officers, Terry Nutter, shot Martinez in the torso. Martinez survived. All the officers were placed on leave but absolved of any wrongdoing.
Yeah, which is standard, you know, protocol. They have to review the case. I think, does Amy Klobuchar have anything to do with the situations?
No, but first of all,
you
I want to say we have the same call mayor named Melvin Carver. It's either Carver or Carter. He's black, and he won the election a year or two ago with incredible odds. And then we have a black head of the Minneapolis Police Department who has a very unusual name. I'll have to look it up. He grew up in the Twin Cities, and he was flabbergasted that this type of violence took place. And then we have a white mayor, Jacob Frey, from Minneapolis, who's a Virginia transplant, who seemed he moved here because he fell in love with Minneapolis. And somebody said that he kind of incited the violence by saying, I don't blame the protesters. They should go out and protest, but they should wear masks because of COVID. And also the Asian officer that we discussed earlier, he was sued in federal court for excessive force once. He beat up a guy who was walking to a girlfriend's house, and the city paid the lawsuit person, Lamar Ferguson, $25,000.
Well, Amy Klobuchar
used to be tough on blacks when she was a Hennepin County attorney. Did you know that?
Failed to get charges brought against police officer involved in George Floyd's death while serving as county attorney in 2006. Oh, thank you.
And what was George Floyd guilty of?
Oh, no, I'm talking about Derek Chauvin. Or in other words, she was basically a prosecutor.
And somebody brought a charge up about Derek, and she failed to follow through?
Yeah, basically.
Good research, John.
Yeah, in 2008, blah, 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 grand jury ultimately decided not to charge the officers with any wrongdoing. You know, kind of what it comes down to is there's groups of people that review, you know, these kind of cases, and there's attorneys that prosecute if there's wrongdoing. So you kind of have to look at the system and go, how are they reviewing these things? Now, what happens is cop unions give a lot of money, lots of money, to support these various people to make sure that they get really good treatment. The question
what
is...
What do you mean?
You mean someone's paying
the officer extra money?
They're basically paying... The unions pay to support political people, whether it's Congress people, whether it's in fact, I think if I'm not mistaken,
just like the worker unions, like the Minnesota DFL, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, they get tons of support from union leaders.
Right, just like the hospitals gave about $1 million to Governor Cuomo. And so Governor Cuomo gave immunity to the nursing homes in regards to the care of their senior citizens, and then he gave the order for them to take – now, this is kind of a similar thing. They had housing available on the ship that went to New York. They had over 800, 900 beds available. And he sends – instead of sending the people there, he sends them to the nursing homes, basically death camps. But here you have a situation where these unions, they pay money to Congress people, to, prosecutors, attorneys, lawyers. They give money to fund certain things so that way later on when they have a problem, they know that they're going to get the best treatment. Like the people they've supported are people they agree with not to go hard on them. Now, I kind of tend to go soft on cops, too, in the sense that Every day, on average, five people will get shot and killed by gangs. Does anyone protest
cops
gangs?
Cops or regular people?
Regular people. Have you ever seen anyone on the street protesting gang violence and how we need to get tougher on, the MS-13 and the Crips and the Bloods and whatever? Have you ever seen people – or how about this one? Every time a cop gets shot and killed, is it okay for cops to go in neighborhoods and burn them down? Would people think that's cool? I'm just saying, putting the shoe on the other foot. Everyone would go, that's terrible.
I feel like the police are so busy fighting certain gangs in some neighborhoods that a lot of it isn't. We haven't heard about gangs since the 80s, since that movie Colors.
No one cares about
except
criminals.
For like Baltimore. Baltimore has a systemic racism and crime level that became a Molotov cocktail when Freddie Gray died. And I'm sure gangs out there fighting for his life.
The big issue is gangs and bad people. They do about 40% of violent crime, 40-45%. Of violent crime is from gangs. From gangs.
I know, but is that true still?
Well, that was based on 2015 statistics. Based on now the number I gave you is I looked at the last 5 years of gang associated homicide, and the totals are always like 1,600, 18, 2,000. The last 5 years, it's always over 1,500 minimum, and it goes up to 2,000 a day, which is five deaths a day. So every day, like since this thing has happened, there's been another 15 people killed by gangs across the country. And no one cares. Now, when you wake
up and you go
to work.
It's not that they don't care. It's just that the media doesn't focus on it.
Well, no, they don't care because no one's out marching. Do you see thousands of people in every city marching against gangs? Every day, five people get killed. Every day.
No, I don't.
Every day. No one cares. In fact, people probably don't want to do it because they're afraid the gangs will kill them, right? You start marching against your local, gangbanger, you're going to go home and find your house, torched. You get your house shot up, right?
So, I think it depends on the city, John.
Well, I know in my area, I'm not, I'll give you an example. Two nights ago, I'm bicycling home. It's 2 a.m, right? And usually I'm by myself. I mean, there's not a lot going on. you'll see occasional one, maybe two cop cars on the way home doing their route. Because, you know, I'm going down Pecos. That's a pretty major, that's a pretty busy street, you know. On the west side, you're going to have about 20 major streets. So it's one of 20 majors. So you can figure in a, you know, if a cop is doing a, you know, 2 to 5 mile beat, that's going to be one of his 8 grids. He's going to be going up and down and back and forth on, right? So the point is, when I see someone walking the street or someone on a bicycle, you know, my little bat senses start tingling. It's like immediately, which direction are they going? Are they looking at me? What's their posture?
You mean
are
the gangs
aggressive?
That are riding in the street?
And drug dealers. Like, what'll happen is they'll shout at you, or they'll look, they'll say, hey, what's going on? Hey, brother, or hey, dude, or whatever. Hey, over here. And they're trying to see if either one, you got a deal, or two, you're looking for drugs, or three, maybe you're a rival gang or whatever, or just trouble. The point is, I ignore. I don't go like, oh, hey, man, or like, don't talk to me. I just like, I didn't hear him. I just keep on going. And then they'll still go, hey, over here. It's like, just keep going. Now, if they go towards me, like they sit on there, I say on a bicycle, and they start following me, you know what they'll do? They'll shadow you and try to pull up side and just to see what you're about. Like, you know, do you have anything for them, or did they get your attention? Well, anyway, point is,
have you ever been stopped by a gang?
I've had people try to throw things at me. I've had people try to tail me. But here's what happens: once I see they're going my direction, I start taking alternate paths, and I hit another gear. I go, in other words, for them to catch me, they got to be booking full velocity. And if they've been riding around all day, they're not, you know, they usually don't have the energy to deal with that, right? But the point is, if they do, I've only had a couple people tail and come up, you know, in my visibility zone. And I always have my cell phone out, and I'm talking on it, and I'm ready to hit 911. So they know already I'm on a phone, and I'm ready to deal. But like yesterday, 2 days ago, I'm riding my bike, and I can hear from about 2 blocks away, I can hear 2 guys talking loud. They're talking loud. And that's immediately a sign, okay, either one, they're arguing, or two, you know, they just talk loud, but the point is they're coming my direction. They're behind me. So that means go fast, go really fast. And then you just kind of like thunder, you listen to see if the voices are getting closer or if they're getting farther away. And they're staying about the same. So it's like, I'm going to really keep booking. And I'm going to, you know, do a couple, I'm not going to wait for a red light. I'm going to like make a little U and go down the other street and divert. And, you know, I hear their voices staying about the same distance. And it's went on about 5 blocks, and I'm getting my phone ready just in case. Yeah, now, probably they're just buddies hanging out. But I don't want to find out. I don't want them to pull up next to me, and it's 2-on-1, you know, and I'm waiting 2 minutes for a cop to get there. So the point is, when I get up in the morning, I don't think about cops. I think about I got to get to work and listen to my boss. I got to worry about my health. I got to worry about, you know, people at the store acting like freaks. And I got to worry about getting in and out at night without some nut, you know, like assaulting me. Those are my 4 top worries. The very last on the list is, oh, if a cop pulls me over, and I know the drill, just show your hands, do what they say, be polite, and you go home. Do you worry about cops every day, like they're going to kill you?
Actually, the cops in this area are kind of predatory. There was 1 month that I got stopped 3 times, and they pulled me over 12 times in 8 years. And I only got 2 citations, and one was my son was moving to my house, and I was on the freeway, and I was trying to call my car insurance because I had to add Lauren to the car insurance, and I got pulled over, and I got like a $120 fine for talking on my cell phone. But
yeah,
overall, they just pull over and give you a warning.
Were you worried they were going to beat you up or assault you or kill you?
No, but I did. I probably could have been in that boat because I was so stressed out that day. I yelled at the cop. I said, I felt inconvenienced. I had white privilege. I told them a lie that this was actually, it wasn't a lie. I told them that my son was moving home. I had to get to my second job, and I only had a 45-minute window to add car insurance. And I said, could you please help me? Oh, I told them that my son had negative thoughts, and the cop was not sympathetic to me at all.
Does your son worry every day about the police killing him? That is top
not in
five.
Duluth, but he might if he lived in Minneapolis now.
Does he ever, I mean, but you know how people talk. Does he ever go like, oh, Mom, I'm just worried about the cops today. They might kill me.
No, they've only pulled him over once in the last year, and it was for a taillight or something like that, or not making a full stop, and they let him go. Now, I do know someone up here, their half-black son got roughed around by the cops up here, and he left the college.
Uh-huh. So for him, that's a daily worry.
Yeah, in this instance, it was in Duluth, and it was around 2010, and it happened. And then there was a black man. We talked about this on another show. There was a black man in Duluth who was high on drugs, like those kind of baking salt things or those salts where people get high. And he was half naked crossing a steep road in winter, and the cops tased him like over 10 times, and he was brought to the hospital. And he had permanent damage, and one of the local non-establishment papers ran a story on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's funny that you mention it because I just thought of something. I wrote something pretty radical a few years ago when I wrote an article for the Duluth Reader, and I'm going to read it to you, but could you talk a few minutes while I look it up? I'm only going to read you the last two sentences what I wrote. And I'm surprised nobody in the news noticed it. Because I probably could have maybe been thrown in jail.
So
I got it now. I'm going to read you the first two paragraphs and then the last paragraph. Millions of tears have fallen for black sons, brothers, lovers, and friends whose assailants took or maimed their lives and then simply went on their way. So that's a quote by Abergani. So I wrote this in November of 2014. Good cop, bad cop. Good kid, bad kid. Good child, black child. Status quo, never had a chance. Should my child be waving an airsoft gun in the air in the light of gun misuse and perception in America? The answer is no. But something got into Tamar Rice, who removed an orange marking from his toy BB gun that he had holstered in his waist. He didn't think by not taking the cops seriously, he would not be taking his own life seriously. A man called 911 told dispatchers that the boy was on a swing set and pointing a pistol that was probably fake and scaring everyone, but officers weren't told by the emergency dispatch that the caller thought the gun might be real. The president of the Cleveland's Police Patrolmen Association told the Associated Press. The perception is that the two Cleveland police officers who are now on administrative leave could have tased the child, according to Rice's father. They could have approached closer. The child was not yelling, being violent, or defying them. They just chose to shoot, and they chose to shoot because it's efficient. The worth of a black child is meaningless in America. So then at the end of my article, I wrote this. In this case, I go with street justice. Street justice will even out the pockets of privilege and deception in the depths of false compass of authority. My bloody hands will cause me to die for that injustice, and with my blood, the score will be settled.
Oh, wow.
And apparently it wasn't inflammatory enough for locals to notice that I was going to die for racial justice.
Well, Minnesota's kind of a communistic state anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, that this for this white cop to go come out of nowhere and treat a black man that poorly is unusual. And then there was that Geronimo Yanez, the Mexican cop that killed Philando Castile a few years ago in St. Paul. So this is the second big incident since 2016 with, you know, Black Lives Matter and unarmed black men dying.
Right.
And then at
so
first they said that he was going to, he was committing forgery, George Lloyd, Floyd. Just think of how many rubber checks I wrote, and I could be dead right now if I was black. Like, they basically killed him because he used a $20 forgery bill.
Yeah, I'm surprised they even called the police on him, actually.
It was Cup Foods. It was a small-owned Muslim business, and I guess it's the owner said on CNN that it's their whatever store policy to let the police know someone's using a forged dollar bill. I thought it was unusual too, like, because by the time they called the cops, he left the store. He didn't try to take the items. He just left the store.
Usually, what we do is we just hand the bill back. We go, this looks fake, or, you know, you should check where you got it from, but, you know, our bank won't accept this. We hand it back to them, like, we don't know where they got it from. We don't know if they're printing hot stuff. You know, maybe they went to the bank and they were handed that. Maybe someone paid them for something and exchanged the bill. Sometimes we get checks or we get bills from the bank that are bad. I mean, it's not often, but, you know, in a year, we might get two or three times that happens. And, again, we just tell them, hey, we can't accept them. You know, I wouldn't even think of calling the police for it, you know.
I know. I think, like, in your city where there's so many things cops could be called for, you have to pick and choose. And one time at Six Flags, I worked at the window where I took, you know, the money, and the average price for the day was between $35 and $40, and I took a fake $100 bill once, but they didn't tell me till 2 weeks later. Like, I didn't know
right.
It was fake.
Right, and, you know, I mean, unless someone's buying, say, $1,000 worth of something, and, you know, they bring a suitcase full of $100 or $20 bills, and you see that they're all fake. You know, I could see calling the cops for that, or, you know, or reporting it. But I just, to me, it seems rather odd. It seems rather odd the police would go to that level of force for $20. It's not like he had, you know, was threatening and blew up the place, from what I understand, or tried to strong arm anyone. It just sounds like, okay, you know, the guy has a bad bill. It's like, okay, he's got a bad bill. I, to me, seems kind of over the top. But, you know, kind of going back to this issue, I think the press is just trying to blow this up. And by this, I mean, we've got over 100,000 people dead. And there's a virus situation that from Australia just did they've been doing a research because they have a suit against China, and they're finding that they can't find this virus in any of the animals the way it is. The mutations on it look like it's lab.
They can't find it in Australian animals or Chinese animals.
It ain't any animal. They can't find it in the bats. They can't find it in the, what, you know, or the ticks or snakes or anything. They say basically because they can track the genome and they can look at the adaptations of it and track it. That's how China, you know, kicked out all the research people. The reporters also, they destroyed evidence because with the evidence you can track and see where it came from and how it mutated. You know, it's like a crime scene. It's like fingerprints. They basically closed the room, no fingerprints, no forensic evidence. So that makes it difficult, but just in the research that's done, basically it's covering up all this stuff that's going on. I mean, millions of, well, not millions, but, you know, 370,000 people are dead. Now, one black man gets abused and dies. And again, it wasn't like he shot him in the head and, you know, as bad as, I know it's a murder
situation. I think it was, like I said, it's because it was in broad daylight. And most Minneapolitans are really sensitive to race. Like I said, the city's diversified. I think it was the shock of how it was done, because I even was working with a staunch Republican yesterday, and he was appalled. So it's crossing color lines.
Well, let me throw it this way. Okay, so you have a white man who killed a black man. Let's just we'll jump the gun and say,
like,
regardless of all.
Like a citizen to a citizen.
We'll just say that a white man killed a black man unjustly. Okay, that's fine. I roll with that. Now let's just say an Asian man killed seven stadiums of 50,000 people. Seven stadiums of 50,000 people, an Asian man killed all races, and no one cares. It's like that's the situation. An Asian country is blocked information on a situation that's every day. You have to wear a mask. We have to wear gloves. We have to stand 6 feet apart. People are dying and killing themselves, suicides. They can't work. We're burying our country. And this is what's going to clog the news cycle, this one situation. And people are going to march in every major city. No one's marching against China taking over Hong Kong. No one cares, right? They're suspending their rights. I mean, they're just taking over Hong Kong. And what they're going to do is, before, they used to have to extradite people from Hong Kong to China. Now they're trying to change the law where they have their own law enforcement in Hong Kong that will deal with people. This is, and no one cares. The whole country's being taken. But one white on black crime, they're going to burn down America. We're going to, you know, every news is going to be about, even all the stuff with the corona. Yeah, they talk about the corona, but they don't talk about China's involvement. They just leave it alone. I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I know there is a lot of injustice going on right under our noses. By the way, I wanted to make two comments because we're going to be closing the show soon. Trump wrote a long tweet last night that he had talked to the Minnesota Governor Waltz, and he said he would approve the National Guard, and he said, once the looting begins, the shooting begins. In other words, anyone who tries to loot or start fires are going to be met with force. And then this morning, I just happened to be on Twitter for the first time in about a week, and Trump put another random tweet up, China exclamation point. Like, I don't know if he's trying to draw attention that he thinks it's China's fault for the virus, but he just put up a random China tweet. So you can comment on that in a minute. I'm going to read a quote by Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. He wrote, "News of the arrest came moments after the arrest of the officer came after Governor Walz acknowledged the abject failure of the response to the protests and called for swift justice for officers involved. Walz said the state would take over the response to the violence and that it's time to show respect and dignity to those who are suffering. Minneapolis and St. Paul are on fire. The fire is still smoldering in our streets. The ashes are a symbolic of decades and generations of pain, of anguish unheard," Walz said, adding, "Now generations of pain is manifesting itself in front of the world, and the world is watching." So what happened was is that people blamed the mayor of St. Paul in Minneapolis for not getting a grip on the violence, so the governor had to step in, and the state had to start making decisions at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, the mayor kind of said, okay, which it's a strategy. He said, just leave the vacate the precinct and let it happen. And there was also, I believe, a story of a cop.
Did the governor say that? I thought the police decided on their own to get the hell out of there.
It could be. I know the mayor kind of was complicit with, like, just leave it alone, get out of there. And then I hear there's a story that one of the cops help light the fire on one of them. I don't know.
Yeah, he did in the AutoZone. It's on my Facebook wall. A St. Paul cop who was disguised and had an umbrella, he was the first one to break the windows of the AutoZone the first night, which I find very disgusting because even if you're racist or not, you live in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and it's a really nice two cities, and you shouldn't be, if you're a member of law enforcement, you should not be involved with destroying the city or inciting violence.
Maybe he didn't
like a lot
that
of those
storm.
Poor people who are continuing the damage. You can see where they're coming from, but not a person in authority.
Maybe he had stock in Pep Boys and he wanted a different store there.
I thought maybe he was mad because they sold him the wrong auto part once.
He could be. To me, it seems that every day the thought is for a human being is what's the best good I can do with this situation? And I just see a lot of people, just watch the news. In L.A., kids are running out onto the highway, like the freeway, stopping cars. They're taking
they are?
Some kids. Yeah. In fact, they're telling the CHP. In fact, this is on like Channel 7 News and you know the local NBC and all of them. They're saying like they're telling people, please do not run into the freeway and try to stop cars. This is dangerous. Were you expecting? You know, like how is this going to get freedom? You're either going to get run over, or someone's going to get mad and road rage and you know drive around you and hit somebody. People are taking flags. There's a site where people are like, it's kind of like a site to burn the flag and stomp on it, you know, because you're upset about freedom. And to me, that just doesn't seem like that. Is that the highest good that you could possibly do? You know, is that the best? Like, can you do something constructive? Can you help people that are poor? Can you get a job? Find a way to survive. To me, it just seems the attitude is anarchy. If people are going to the worst behavior you possibly have.
I know, and I feel like it lasted too long. Like, yes, the arrest was made today, but this has been going on since Tuesday, and I just think that it's they could have burning the police station down was. It just seemed like the diffusion of the anger didn't even go down until today, probably when the arrest was made, but it lasted too long. It moved into St. Paul all the way to the east side. There's a good Minneapolis and St. Paul are right next to each other. Target was forced to close 30 stores, including on the outside of the city limits, and so was Walmart and a few other major chains. So right now, John, go ahead.
Well, the thought is, okay, let's go to, you know, a similar angle. Okay, there are Mexicans or there are migrant workers that are oppressed and have no rights. I think I'm going to go break into a Macy's and go into the jewelry department and I'm going to steal some stuff. I'm going to go into the you know, the local TV shop and get a big screen. And that will somehow, I don't know, that will create justice for the migrant workers. Like these are a bunch of kids hyped up running.
It turns out to be a human rights situation where people just start thinking of themselves and they don't think of others.
I mean, I don't see there were a few people that were over the age of 30, a couple. But the majority of people, when you talk about the breaking windows and setting fire and running and, you know, being in an aggressive stance, they're kind of like college student age. You know, like, and I have a feeling when they look at all this, they're going to see that there's some
people.
There was
people a
like
lot of white stuff. People, too, in the protests.
A lot
in
of
fact,
white.
It was majority white.
What I'm saying is there are people like Antifa and others, other groups of people, that are waiting for something to go down, any cause. It could be, you know, Me Too. It could be gun rights. It could be whatever. They're waiting for something that they can all, when people are marching, they can run out there, and if they're opportunists, right? It's like, oh, here we go. Smash a window. Start. What's in your mind to think? How is this? Like, once you want to meet with the governor and go to the steps of the capital of your state, and have a, you know, declaration, have a spokesman come out there and organize and say, you know, this is unacceptable, or, stop killing black people. That's fine. And you go to the politicians, or you go to the leaders, or even you go to the police station, but you go, hey, this is wrong. But what goes in your mind to say, smash a window and start a fire?
Somebody who's hell-bent crazy. I saw people walking down this. This one guy had like a, it looked more wicked than like a crowbar. The first night in Target, he was trying to break into the registers. And then I saw a man walking down the street with a chainsaw. And you have to imagine there's a ton of people there. If he was holding the chainsaw wrong, he nicked somebody, he could have severely injured or killed somebody. So it's just
right.
Unacceptable.
Now,
so certain elements of the
let's say you and I are walking down the street, okay, and we're marching, right? Okay, we're in L.A., there's like there's 200 people with us, and we got, now think about this, you go out there, okay, if you have signs, what happens? Someone had to go, oh, let's get some cardboard, let's get some paper, let's get markers. We have to have a pole to tape it to. Also, we have to tape that, or, you know, staple it, or however you're going to fix it. And, you know, and we're going to go and at night, so we do have some water or some snacks or something, because we're going to be out for 2 or 3 hours, right, and driving around, walking around. And where are we going to park the car, and where are we all going? And then to do something else beyond that, you have to have a plan, right? Okay, you're going to smash a window with what? Well, find a rock, okay? And we're going to start a fire with what? Well, who has matches? Do you have flammable, you know, something like a cloth or a rag or this or that? And who brings a chainsaw? Now, you think about that. Do you have a chainsaw? How many people have a chainsaw in the city?
Well, apparently he charged it before he left the house, and he lived in the neighborhood.
So what I'm
hey, by the
is,
way, John, I have to go to work in less than an hour. I have a bad sore throat, and I'm closing the show with one of your songs, not the one I played in the beginning. And I have to rewrite. I have to completely rewrite our description. So what is your conclusion before I go off the air?
The conclusion is whatever has happened was planned. People have a plan. You can plan to do good. You can plan to do what's just, like a cop. You can plan to do good, or you can plan to do evil or bad. And whatever you do, it's probably been premeditated. Now, say in the case of the cop, how many times do they have to arrest someone or put handcuffs? Probably a few times, you know, not every day, maybe not every minute, but you've done it more than once, and you've practiced and rehearsed protocol and procedure. So the idea of putting your knee or your foot or your arm or wrapping around someone's neck, that's gone through your mind, and you've premeditated how you're going to do it, how you're going to respond, and the counteraction to your actions. The people protesting and burning and destroying things. It may be impulse, but there is some premeditation to go to that level. Because you can't just smash a window with your fist. You can't start a fire by rubbing two sticks together. So,
I'm disappointed. Yeah. You're right. And I'll just add to that quick before we close the show. I'm disappointed that the violence was, it wasn't random, but yet it affected a lot of people. I heard an Asian lady cry who had her own business in her own home on Lake Avenue, and it was burglarized and damaged. Even under COVID, she said she had been closed 3 months and she could barely take any more. And apparently her house was converted into a small business. And they burned down a condo complex that was supposed to go for low-income housing. They burned down a Native American center. And I just think that whoever was on the streets that night, whether it was ragtag bands of hoodlums or honest protesters, that it was completely out of hand. Like, one man's death provided that much damage, and we could have nobody was really listening to the authorities or even considering what they had to say. Even when the black mayor, Melvin Carter, cried out for using civility. So I know there were a lot of undercover cops trying to tape and measure the situation, tape and the, like, videotape. And hopefully this thing will, there'll be good dialogue that comes from it, just like we do regularly on our show. And we'll have a panel of callers that can put in their input. But I do want the systemic racism to end. And I do want blacks to feel like they're not walking around their tiptoes in American society. And with that, I will close the show. Any last comments?
They should get all the white cops out of Minnesota and let the gangs, like the mafia and like the cartels and like the MS-13, let them run the streets and let the people see how they like that kind of justice.
We'll find out soon. I think this has been a polarizing example of what can go wrong in America. So I'll see you next Tuesday, and thanks for calling in, and happy birthday early.
Ho, ho, ho.
I'll be calling you tomorrow, and good night, John.
Good
I'm going to play your
John.
Tune now.
Happy.
Bye-bye.
You learn in life can't help you when you're old. She's got the cushion for the pushes and the loves of truth. Well, she's talking to me, well, she's looking at you. She says there is no other. Borrow to cover for my friends. Tell me how to
right when it blows up in your hands. What a mess this world is in, who can understand it? Got to realize we're only visiting this planet.
A miracle can make